Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
So my Mother's Day, I'm sitting there watching LeBron get fouled, offensive fouls, hit a shot, and then within like 15 to 20 minutes, I heard the post game where he said, I just scratched the play that my coach drew up, and I'm thinking, there's a coach that's going to get fired. Then I flipped over to the Diamondbacks, and Daniel Hudson gets a spot start, and I thought Daniel Hudson was the sports story of the Arizona weekend. If we look around Arizona sports, clearly Daniel Hudson and what he did for the Diamondbacks, the best story, the top story over the weekend here in the state. Sports360AZ.com. I'm Brad Sussmat. We partner with AZ Central Sports. Ron Borges is going to join us in about 15 minutes. Ron, of course, longtime Boston Herald Patriots insider and columnist on many fronts in Boston. So by this time tomorrow, it sounds as though the Tom Brady suspension is going to come down. And I think nationally, that is the story along with LeBron that people are talking about, unless you're into Ricky Fowler's girlfriend. And I understand I need to see this. I didn't hear about it, but Eric is all excited, all a buzz about Ricky Fowler's girlfriend. So Ron's going to join us. And then Jude is going to be with us today. Jude LaCava. I look forward to visiting with Jude, one of my true close friends in the industry and someone that has a great feel of everything going on in Arizona sports. Paula is off today, so we'll have Jude with us. And I think with Jude, it's he and I are on the same page that Sarver is just killed the Suns, and the way that things are going here in the postseason, even if they'd made it to the playoffs, do you think that without roster they'd be in existence still? No. No, they're not. And, you know, we'll talk about the health of the Cardinals and the Diamondbacks and everything that's going on in Arizona sports.
And Jude's an Ohio guy, Brad, don't forget, so I'm sure he's got a thought or two.
Oh, he's going to give this.
LeBron is
the greatest.
Yeah, he doesn't really sugarcoat it like that.
He's a LeBron lover. The thing with LeBron is, like my wife yesterday, turn the channel. I hate LeBron. What is your thing? What did he do to you? He had a shot. Well, of course he did. I have to do this. She just doesn't like him. I don't know. Enjoy greatness while you have a chance to. It's not going to be around that long. So let's get you caught up. Some things on my mind in the world of sports. We'll get off and running here because there's a lot going on. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. The Timbers Lounge has plenty of great free entertainment for you. If you head on up to the Honda Resort and Casino, you can pull down on the slots. Great winnings, great fun anywhere around the state or around the country. So you watch sports360az.com. The Honda Resort and Casino, I've been there many, many times. I'll be up there next month for the White Mountain Sun Devil Club. Big Arizona State Sun Devil commitment that will be there in the White Mountains, and they'll all be heading over to the Honda Resort and Casino to have some fun, party it up a little bit, enjoy the high country, enjoy the White Mountains, the beautiful scenery, and stay at the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. That is the Honda Resort and Casino. Do you want me to go with Diamondbacks or the basketball? What's more interesting to you today, Eric?
The basketball,
of course.
Really?
I'm kind of...
Really?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, my gosh. Diamondbacks play 160-some-odd games?
Yeah, but they've got to win 84 for me.
What LeBron did, I mean, LeBron saved Cleveland, at least temporarily.
Well, okay, so here's where I'm at on the playoffs. The more that I watch what's going on in the playoffs, the more I'm convinced that you could have the Clippers against the Cavaliers as an NBA final. And who would have ever thought that the Clippers would be in an NBA final? Sitting through last night's Clippers game was just painstaking. I'll get into that in a minute because I think there's long-lasting ramifications over the whole hack a guy foul. You're going to see it next year in college basketball and even down to high school, so we'll get into that in a minute. But first, yesterday, so the LeBron James, the final minute of the Cavaliers-Bulls game yesterday was about as good as you're going to get in sports. For if you hate LeBron, don't hate LeBron. If you can't enjoy the last minute to a minute and a half of what happened in that game, and it wasn't just some short little minute. LeBron James had three offensive fouls yesterday. Three. And, you know, I thought all three of them were fouls. Joakim Noah completely fouls LeBron James. They don't call it. The end of the game, Derrick Rose makes a bucket with 7 seconds to go. And the head coach for Cleveland is trying to call a timeout, and he doesn't have a timeout, which is something that I would see in my YMCA games on a Saturday with my 10-year-old. and his assistant coach Tyronn Lue, who's really good, is saying, no, we don't have any timeouts left. So that leads us all the way down to this. Officials have to go look at the shot clock with a minute or 1.8 seconds remaining in the game. And both teams are out of timeouts, and both teams go over to the sideline to their coaches with whiteboards, and they're drawing up plays like they have a timeout. How does that work? How does that happen? Again, something when the competition committee gets together in this offseason, they will have to get rid of that. So there was an advantage for Cleveland. What I love about this is, and I'll give you the backstory in a minute on this, from what I've heard, what I've read, and people I've talked to on this. So 1.8 seconds left, great drama, great theater, and this happens.
Dellavedova gets set to trigger. LeBron's on the left wing. JR is way around on the right. The Cavs go into motion. It comes to LeBron. He takes a fadeaway for the win. He knocks it down! LeBron James from the left corner. He drains it. And the Cavaliers have knocked off the Chicago Bulls in dramatic fashion, 86-84.
Now remember, they had it at 0.8, but the referees went back over and added some time back onto the clock. So it was 1.8. That final play, they go over to David Blatt, the coach of Cleveland. This is the story, I think, of it all. LeBron makes the play. It's great or you hate it. There's no middle ground. Either you're saying yes or I can't stand LeBron, one or the other. So someone asked LeBron James about what was the plan on the final play of the game. And usually, before we hear this, usually it's, well, you know, I'm supposed to get the ball and I'm supposed to do this. And it's just boring, vanilla, whatever. Here is what LeBron James said after the game.
To be honest, the play that was drawn up, I scratched it. And I just told Coach, just give me the ball. And, you know, we either going to go in overtime or I'm going to win it for us. It was that simple.
Were you supposed to inbound on the original play?
I was. I was supposed to take the ball out. I told Coach, there's no way I'm taking the ball out unless I could shoot it over the backboard and go in. So, you know, I told him, have somebody else take the ball. I'll give me the ball and everybody get out the way.
That is the story of the weekend. The final play, I scratched it. David Blatt, you're fired. You're done.
The only analogy that I can really come up with, Brad, and it's a pretty simple one, when we're trying to critique this whole LeBron, David Blatt thing.
Yeah.
LeBron basically treats David Blatt like the substitute teacher. Like, you technically are in charge, but I don't respect you. Kevin Love doesn't respect you. Kyrie Irving. We're kind of just going to do our own little thing. You're still the coach, and I'm still going to call you coach, but you're like substitute teacher coach. You don't really have our respect.
How great is that? That he actually leans in the mic and says, no, I scratched that play. But then on the other side of it is, guys, think of this. We're on the court, and our best player with 1.8 seconds left is going to inbound the ball, which means he's not going to get – just think of that from basketball stance. Let's draw up a play, and we're going to have our best player inbound the ball, meaning he's not going to get the shot off. Now, if there's 2.5 – he could inbound it, and it could go right back to him. But you know where I'm at on this, Eric? Just from a basketball sense, that makes no sense. I'm going to have LeBron James inbound it and not touch it.
And think about the degree of difficulty. Okay, he's falling out of bounds in front of the Bulls bench.
Against Jimmy Butler, who has been terrific.
Correct.
On him. Jimmy Butler, if you look at the numbers, Jimmy Butler's defense on LeBron James is about as good as Kawhi Leonard. There's nobody else within the league that plays defense.
10 for 30.
On LeBron,
right.
Yeah.
10 for 30.
Well, and you know, people are going to say the 10 for 30, Eric. I don't know. If I don't have Kyrie Irving because he's on one leg, and I don't have Kevin Love, and J.R. Smith's a dope, although he hits some shots, I don't have a whole lot.
Yeah, it goes well beyond the box score. You can't just look. You had to watch the game to appreciate it.
Sure, sure. And do I think, okay, do I think that in the history of the NBA, that guys like Kobe Bryant said, no, we're not going to run this play? Of course they did. Do I think that guys like Kevin Durant could do the same thing or Michael Jordan could do the same thing? And there's people today saying, this is what's wrong with sports. This is what's wrong with authority. And what kind of message does it send to our kids when the player says, that's not what we're doing? you have to look at your star players. And if you're LeBron James, I think I can't imagine anybody would support David Blatt. Because when David Blatt is asked, okay, so your last play that you drew up was for LeBron to inbound the ball, meaning he wasn't going to get the last shot, and LeBron scratched it. Oh, I agree with the coach. I mean, that's pretty easy, I suppose. Somebody will take that contrarian view because it's easy to go against the grain rather than, I don't know, superstars have every right. If Peyton Manning is at the line of scrimmage and he doesn't like the play, he checks out of it. Yes? Yes. Okay? Are there times in baseball where guys run through stop signs with third base coach? Yes, they do. Are there times when star pitchers are on the mound and they shake off their guy and the pitching coach has to come out and have it out with them? Yes, they do. In sports, that's what makes it so great. You can't pick your spot and do that every single time. Did LeBron undermine David Blatt yesterday? I don't think he did.
Is it conceivable that the Cavs could win the title and LeBron go to Dave Griffin and the other higher-ups and say, you know what?
Get him out of here.
This thing with David Blatt just isn't working. And David Blatt gets called in July after the ticker tape parade and says,
he's already renting. He's got to be renting. He knows.
We appreciate everything. Thanks. Yeah. You're going to get paid for the next couple of years, but we're going to go in a different direction. Why? Because LeBron wants a new coach.
And can I blame him?
Not really.
I mean, seriously.
Honestly, you can't.
I'm siding with the player on this one.
And it's been a circus. This wasn't the first incident where LeBron and Blatt have not seen eye to eye this season.
Sure, this isn't Marcus Morris degrading and acting like a fool to Jeff Hornacek, because it's Marcus. It's a nobody in comparative terms. The other game, look, fouling DeAndre Jordan. I couldn't. Did you sit through Clippers Houston all the way?
Yeah, I had it on. We had it on at the house.
But did you watch from?
Not the whole thing.
And so here's the other side of it. James Harden after the game last night threw Kevin McHale under the bus. So the Rockets fouled one player, DeAndre Jordan. He had 34 free throws last night. One player. He made 14 of 34. Okay. And someone asked James Harden, did you like the strategy? And he said, I don't like the hack of whoever strategy, but that's a coaching decision. Okay. So again, star player second guessing his coach publicly.
But not out of line. Honestly, just like LeBron. I mean, it's not do we mostly agree with James Harden? I would say the majority of the people probably would.
Kevin McHale said he was trying to, quote, muck up the game by playing small.
And the people at TNT have to be cringing when these games take place. Oh. And it's Kevin Harlan and Reggie Miller just trying to fill time during free throws.
You can kind of hear it in Kevin's voice.
Of course.
And you have to believe that the guys back in the studio, you know, if they were mic'd up, if they were on Periscope, you couldn't show any of it, because I know those guys would be saying bleep this and bleep that, and you can believe this. And that. It just was hard to watch. We'll get into that as the show moves along as well. Ricky Fowler's girlfriend has got Eric all wound up, so we've got to go into that at some point today. And Tiger finished, like, I don't know, the bottom five at the Players. He didn't shoot 70 once this week. Is he going to be like the guy that we go watch that's playing with like Jason Duffner and Jason Day and said, that was Tiger Woods. At one time, he was really good. And how long is he going to go through this? Some other things on my mind that we'll get to as well as the show moves on. Next up, to Boston, Ron Borges. Next 24 hours, Deflategate. The penalty on Tom Brady's coming down. What will it be? We'll talk with him next.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
While the drama of LeBron James and him saying, I scratched that play, that had the national attention over the weekend. Clearly everything is moving to Boston and Tom Brady and the suspension. What will it be? How long will it be? When will it be? Boston Herald columnist and Talk of Fame Network host Ron Borges. Good to have him back on the program for a couple of minutes. How are you, Ron?
Be good. How you doing?
I'm doing well. What are you hearing today as we sit here Monday, 10:20 out here on the West Coast, back in your end of the world? Is it today or tomorrow for Tom Brady, Ron?
A little unclear. People keep using that. I talk and keep using the word imminent, but imminent can be defined and redefined each hour, I guess. But the other thing I keep hearing more and more is a four-game suspension. So if, in fact, that's what it is, which is probably fair, frankly, in light of the whole situation. Not the, you know, in the opinion of people in New England, but in general, I think it's probably fair. Then the next move would be Brady.
What's been the reaction in Boston towards this story, big picture?
Oh, mass hysteria, you know, world's against us. Everybody hates Tom Brady, you know, the conspiracy by the league and the cult. You know, it's been absurd, really, if you think about it. Brad, what's the last thing that the suits in New York at the NFL office want?
Mm-hmm.
Mud on Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, J.J. Watt, or the AFC Championship game. I mean, they don't want any of those things. So the idea that they conspired to create this, to sort of quote-unquote get the Patriots or get Brady, I think is ridiculous, but that's sort of the loud consensus here in New England.
The Spygate than this gate, which one is more egregious in your opinion?
I would say Spygate for a couple of reasons. You know, an intelligent coach could do with that kind of information, taking it back, comparing it with game plans, with the game tape, seeing what the plays are as related to those hands. I think you could do a lot with that, number one. And number two, more egregious, they were warned not to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that is the worst of it. At least Brady could say, well, I didn't, you know, I don't know. 11-5, 12-5, 13-5 PSIs, I don't know. But they can't say that. There was a clear letter sent out to all 32 head coaches directly and the teams from the league office saying a cease and desist from taping the opposing coaches' hand signals, and they did it anyway. So I think that was pretty defiant.
Is there anybody in Boston from a fan base or media base that you run into that says, you know, this organization is jacked up? This is the second time that something major has happened. Or is this really not that big of a deal, Ron? I mean, there's people that have that stance, too.
Well, you're talking to one of those people who does think it's a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's symptomatic of something that's gone haywire down there, this sort of sense of we're not only above the law, we're the only people who know the law. Everybody else gets it different, you know, and gets it wrong. I mean, it was the case with the plays that they ran that were so controversial against the Baltimore Ravens. Although technically, at that point in time, they were within the letter of the law. They certainly weren't within the spirit of the law. They were clearly there to deceive, not to, you know, in a way that really had nothing directly to do with I'm playing football better than you're playing football. And I think that, you know, you just scratch your head after a while and say, why are you doing these things? Why do you feel you have to do Nixonian-like things? And then if you do make that choice, why do you then act surprised when people criticize you and want to come down hard on you? But I think I'm in the minority. Most people are waving the flags here and the pom-poms, and we've really turned into Austin, Texas. It's kind of sad, tell you the truth.
Boston Herald columnist, Talk of Fame Network host Ron Borges. You can read Ron's column that he just put up on Talk of Fame Network. I'll let you tell the story here. This is not the first time that a suspension is going to be coming down of length. You wrote about this earlier today on Talk of Fame Network. Tell me about that.
Well, yeah, you're right, Brad. I heard a lot of talk back here in particular in New England about, you know, this is just without precedent, and you know, never had such a big star ever had to ever been threatened in this way, and I knew that not to be the case. So I did a little research and decided I'd write about the suspension in 1963 of Paul Hornung, the reigning NFL Most Valuable Player, who 2 years earlier had set the a record for scoring in the both in the regular season and in the championship game, and his regular season scoring record of 176 points lasted until 2006, and that was in 1961, if I recall. And he was suspended along with Alex Karras, who was a three-time All-Pro defensive lineman for the Detroit Lions at the time, for a year for gambling on games, and gambling somewhere between $50 and $500, which, you know, you and I could make a wager like that. It would hardly even be considered gambling. But, you know, it was a massive story. I was a young kid then, and the idea that Paul Hornung, whose nickname was the Golden Boy, because he had blonde hair and he was the Heisman Trophy winner from Notre Dame and this big star with his Packer teams of the Lombardi era. Boom, he's out of football, really? And it was indefinite. It turned out to be a year suspension, but it was indefinite at the time. And Karras owned a third interest in a bar, the Lindell AC in Detroit. He was forced to settle that. And then I also made note, because a lot of people sort of, especially around New England, were, you know, wringing their hands about poor Tom at the Super Bowl. And, of course, the owner, Bob Kraft, came out and demanding an apology for what Tom had been put through. And I just pointed out that it was nothing like what Len Dawson went through in the week of Super Bowl IV. When on the Tuesday of that week, the Huntley-Brinkley Report, which was the highest-rated
show of record, really, in our state, yeah, our country, rather.
Yeah, exactly right. You know, and David Brinkley came out and said the doctor was a target of a federal gambling probe, and that his name had been found along with $400,000 in the company of a gambler who had been arrested, also ironically enough, named Dawson. Turned out that there was no validity to it, but Dawson was under so much heat that the team moved him to a different hotel and put him in there under an assumed name.
Hmm.
And he played well enough that Sunday that they upset the Minnesota Vikings, and he was the MVP of the game. But I would argue that he was under far more pressure than Tom Brady was the week of Super Bowl 49. For possibly deflating football. But I think, you know, these things get lost in history, and that's one of the things, as you know, Brad, and you've helped us with it, trying to do with the Cockapoo Network, to sort of bring historical context to present-day events.
You got to have context in this day and age. Ron Borges with us, Boston Herald columnist, one of the best in the business, Talk of Fame Network host as well. All right, a couple other questions about Brady. Everybody's been trying to psychoanalyze the legacy and, you know, what happens here and all that. From your view, you've seen him since day one, right?
Yes.
So from day one to where you see Tom Brady today, when this suspension, if the suspension, it sounds like it's coming, do you view him differently, Ron? Will you view him differently?
Yeah, I mean, you know, look, a little bit. Look, in the grand scheme of the game, it's a relatively minor violation, but it speaks to a point that's a little bit alarming. Look, I'm kind of old school about trying to follow the rules in sports. I raised my kids to do that, and had that drum into my own head when I was playing sports. It's supposed to be the one place in American society that really is an even playing field is supposed to be in athletics. If you're the fastest guy, it doesn't matter. If your dad is the poorest guy in town and somebody else's dad is the richest guy in town. But if, you know, one of those guys is starting 20 yards away from the starting blocks, you know, I think, then where are we going? And I think, although I think this was a minor thing, and I don't really believe it affected, I know it didn't affect the game. I mean, if you look, Brady played better in the second half than the first half with these supposedly reinflated balls. But I just think if there was some sort of effort there to manipulate the game, in a small way. And I think that, you know, it's very easy these days. It's become very acceptable to say, well, everybody's doing it, whether there's any proof of that or not. And so I'm not doing anything different than the next guy, and so I just do it. Next thing you know, everybody's justifying everything, and the game's really become kind of perverted. Certainly, that in my mind, has happened in track and field with sprinters in particular.
Sure,
but
sure.
I was always a big fan of track and field. Not so much anymore, because I know both these guys are running on high test, or you're not winning. And to me, that's a difference. Now it's about who's got the best chemist, not who's the best athlete.
Okay, so, let me ask you this in terms of Bob Kraft. We saw Bob Kraft out here that Monday of the Super Bowl pretty much bang his fist and say that I want apologies at Belichick and Brady and all of that. Do you think that he feels as though he was deceived by Tom Brady?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's how he's going to play it. Whether he actually was or not, I don't know. I think he jumped the shark there a little bit. I know there were people trying to advise him not to go off and make the statement that he did, but it's hard to advise the boss.
Right, right.
If he wants to go make the statement, he's going to make it, and that's what happened. I think he probably regrets it a little bit now. Because he had to come out, and now, after the report comes out, he makes a somewhat continued the defiant statement, but at the end says, you know, we'll win a 32, we'll accept whatever punishment we're getting. So he really sort of hung Brady out there, saying, we're not going to appeal this, whatever happens. So if there's any appeal, it's all on you. You don't have our support because we're not going to do that. And I think it showed a weakness in his position, and sort of he just didn't think before he left. And you would think he would know better than that, but emotions got in there, and I think he made a tactical mistake. I think they've made mistakes all the way through, attacking Wells and attacking the report and attacking the referee and the ideal gas theory and all this. You know, look, the fact of the matter is you did it, and you know you did it. Exactly how it happened, we can debate. But you know what happened. So just take your punishment.
Last question then, and this has been asked of me many, many times. Some have laughed at it when I've brought this up. Legally, Tom Brady's agent has come out and has been very critical of the Wells report. Is there something legal down the road that could be happening as this goes on and Brady's image continues to get tarnished that could be done on Brady's people's behalf? Would it ever go that far?
I don't think so. I mean, there's always a possibility, but I don't think so because I think, as I understand it, under the collective bargaining agreement, suspensions and these kind of issues, as they relate to on-the-field activities, are the final arbiter is the commissioner. I believe that that's the case. It's different on these sort of off-the-field issues.
Right.
And things, but I believe on the field he's the final arbiter. So I think you could sue, but you. More than likely, the court would rule you have no standing, that you collectively bargained this and your union agreed to abide by the commissioner's findings. So I don't think they'd have much of a leg to stand on. Secondly, if they try to do that, his cell phone would be out there in discovery. And I think the last thing they want, for obvious reasons, maybe not for obvious reasons, but apparently there's something on that cell phone that they don't want out there, because if it exonerated you, I'm sure you'd be happy to have your lawyer pick through it and pick out the things that exonerate you. I think because of that, there also would be no legal appeal.
Four games, though. That's what we're going to leave this conversation with. Four games is what you believe will happen.
That's what I believe is going to happen, and I believe what they've tried to do is come up with a punishment that all sides would just accept, and that kind of ends it, and we move on. There's always a wild card possibility that Brady gets his back up and says, you know, I'm going to appeal it, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, and try to fight it. Whether he actually will do that, I don't know, but that's what I'm hearing. Four games, which frankly is the same penalty, as you know, that Ray Farmer, the general manager of the Browns, got for texting an assistant coach, which is also prohibited, game activity, you know, during a game. And what I was told, the text read the following: why aren't we passing more? It's probably a question that two-thirds of the Cleveland Browns were asking. You know? I don't think it was the worst thing in the world, and he got four games.
Appreciate your time, Ron, as always. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Sure thing, Brad. Bye now.
Take care. Ron Borges, Boston Herald columnist. Good stuff there. Talk of Fame Network host. Check out their content, talkoffamenetwork.com. Really good content there for you NFL fans. If you've not found Talk of Fame Network, if you've not bookmarked it, you're missing out there. Jude is going to join us just after 11. So on the other side, I'm going to get into this Ricky Fowler girlfriend stuff. Tiger, just stinking out loud. And the Diamondbacks. I was pretty interested in the Diamondbacks this weekend as we continue on a busy Monday. Sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona, Arizona, Arizona-centric. Check out our content on Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Over the weekend, the Padres were here on the Diamondbacks front, and the bullpen let them down. No, I shouldn't say that. Let me go back on that. I'm thinking of another game. The Diamondbacks won yesterday 2-1, which was fine. Daniel Hudson had the spot start. He threw 56 pitches since coming off two Tommy John surgeries. I've been of the opinion on that one that he is somebody that I would like to see transition into being a closer. Pedro brought that up a year ago, and he may move back, but yesterday I thought he looked great. He looked great, and the Diamondbacks got just enough offense off the bat of Aaron Hill to help them win the game.
Aaron Hill sends it out to left field, and that ball Judy Drago, the third for Hill, and it's 1-0 Diamondbacks.
And they'd get some offense. Aaron Hill swinging the bat much better. He didn't look good at all the first month. That was Fox Sports Arizona there. Appreciate that. Solo home run, they beat the Padres. Here is Chip Hale on Daniel Hudson's role on the staff moving forward after yesterday.
We talk about that a lot, you know, what his future is, and we've really tried to stay not getting too far out in the future and just saying, let's keep him healthy, inning here, two innings. You know, he could be a starter next year. He could be a setup man. He could be a closer. I mean, as long as he's healthy and he feels strong going into next season, I think we could decide on that with his input, of course.
So here's the thing. It's another arm that's coming along. It's an arm that looks lively, which I like. It's also an experienced arm. You can't just keep bringing guys up. Like yesterday, J.C. Ramirez was great. J.C. Ramirez did a great job. But as they move forward to try to become respectable, I think they actually are respectable this season. Eric, I'm not just looking at my 84-win prediction.
I definitely think they're respectable.
They're not kicking the ball around the yard. They're not looking disinterested. They got rid of some guys that had been here entirely too long that needed to move on. Goldschmidt's having an MVP start to the season, although Bryce Harper is going to say plenty about that, and he's in town now.
And, Brad, what Chip Hill said really wasn't coach speak, because they could do several different things with Hudson.
He could
start. He could close. He could be like the stretch setup guy who comes in for two or three innings. Because eventually the starting pitching will wear down. It happens every year.
Well, but this goes back to the Addison Reed thing that I've been talking about. So, yeah, he's the closer right now, but he's not Dave Stewart's closer. He's not Tony La Russa's closer. He's not Chip Hale's closer. And I'm just looking at Chip's, right? If you're looking for Chip's, would you say, we'll take Daniel Hudson and two Tommy John surgeries because he's looked pretty good in Arizona? Or if you're Arizona, it's, you know, Daniel's coming along. We know behind the scenes how he's coming along. We could shift him into a closer. We'd have to have 20, 30 pitches. He's had two TJ surgeries. We could extend his career, and he could transition into that. Thus, that would make Reed available. Thus, we could bring something back here that we need to add. I don't know. The next time Nick Ahmed hits somebody or hits a bat, like when he got run into yesterday, that was the hardest hit he'd had all season long when the guy was rounding second base, Will Myers. I'd like to see them add more offense. It's pretty clear to me that adding some pitching and some more offense up the middle, like Gosiewicz, since they signed Saltalamacchia, it's like a light went on. I better start hitting because I'm not going to be here much longer. That was the message that was sent. But I think Hudson makes it interesting for them. They're an interesting team to watch.
With a bunch of guys that are just sort of, I don't want to use the term no names, but you just have the Enders
names because they're not in New York or Boston or LA or San Francisco.
But there's not a lot of name identity on the Diamondbacks outside of Paul Goldschmidt and Mark Trumbo and a couple others. That's okay. That's okay, because in the past we've seen the star-studded lineups and the high payroll players, and what's that got you?
There wasn't a whole lot in Kansas City last year.
Nope.
I mean, there wasn't really much of anything in Kansas City. So, no, to your point, you're right. I just think that, you know, Hellickson drives me crazy when he starts. Like, they're giving him such a long leash, Hale and Harkey and La Russa and Stewart. And at some point, guys, we cannot be down 2-0, 3-0 in every game that Jeremy Hellickson pitches. And he's just missing a little bit here, and he's just missing a little bit there.
They're chuckling right now in Tampa because they're telling people in Arizona, I don't want to say I told you so, but guess what? I told you so.
When I look at their starting rotation, like I wrote a couple weeks ago, Chase Anderson, they may want to consider sending down. That was stupid that I wrote that. He's played well. Okay, I was wrong. It happens. At some point with Hellickson, it's we've seen this movie. We've tried to work through this movie. Yeah, it's only the middle of May. But the game that Hellickson pitched in the other night, they scored, was it 5 or 6 runs? They should have won that game. If you score 5 or 6 runs, you should win most nights in Major League Baseball. You should, unless your pitching stinks. So I'm kind of looking around the field with them. Okay. I've said that this is the start of the year when the 84 prediction came out, that La Russa's not going to sit around and just watch bad baseball. And Stewart's not going to sit around and watch bad baseball.
Yeah, remember where we were a year ago at the beginning of May with this team.
Oh, we're already in the Cardinal minicamp.
Oh yeah, they weren't even in double digit wins yet.
No, we could, but now they are relevant. They're relevant. People are watching. I've heard the television ratings are great. I don't always get wound up about TV ratings. People slow to watch car crashes. It doesn't mean it's any good, but they're fun to watch. Now they have Washington coming in here. I'm thinking about reaching out to Matt Williams, jumping on with us tomorrow, Wednesday. The Nationals come here, and I would have to say that early on in the season, they're a bit of a mystery to me. Now, I'm sure that Matt has plenty of good reasons as to why a team that's as talented as they are has not produced the wins. I mean, people were talking about them as the best team that's out there. Bryce Harper, if you want to pay the price of admission to go see a baseball game, go the next three games. Go tonight, go tomorrow, because Bryce Harper, tonight, I'm not going tonight, but I will definitely be watching the game. And when he comes up to bat, he's 22. In his last 16 at-bats, he has 10 hits, and six of those 10 are home runs. I mean, he's absolutely killed it. His slugging percentage, he leads the league in home runs. He leads the league in walks. He's going to get a lot more walks the next 3 days, I think. He's eighth in the National League for wins above replacement. WAR, people get all wound up about that. Harper said, I don't know if it's hot. I mean, that's just the way I need to play. That's the way I need to come in every single day and play this game. He's 22 and he's saying this. It's terrific. And he's here in town the next three games. So it'll be fun to watch. Ricky Fowler on the other side, and I'm going to circle back around on the NBA playoffs too. Jude LaCava in about 10 minutes, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. It's hard to imagine it could be Clippers and Cavaliers. I'm going to get back to that in a minute. But after the first, after this weekend, I'm looking around the NBA playoffs. They're about halfway through. It seems to me that's the direction that we're going. Much more on LeBron saying, I scratch that. Eric, you ever just scratched something I've suggested for this show?
Daily, yeah.
So knowing that, do you think that this is that big of a deal with LeBron? I don't think it is.
No.
I don't think it is.
No. Who runs the Cavs?
It's the culture.
LeBron or David Blatt?
All right, so Ricky Fowler, this morning, I give Eric a call. Every day we talk as we come in to do the show, and we talk by phone, and we don't rehearse much, but there's things that are of interest to me and things that are of interest to him. I was all wound up about LeBron. He was all wound up about Ricky Fowler. I didn't see the end of it. I've seen on social media it's the biggest thing ever. Fill me in on why, what is the magnitude, other than Ricky Fowler finally won his second tournament ever. Ricky Fowler has been like this cool dude that has very colorful Puma attire. And he hits the ball a long ways. He's been a dirt bike racer, a BMXer. He's from Temecula. That's right near where I grew up. So I think he's kind of cool. He's fun to watch. But he never wins until this weekend. He finally won. But it sounds as though he's winning in the social area.
So Ricky Fowler wins the playoff.
Yeah.
Takes a moment.
At the Players' Championship.
At the Players' Championship.
Yesterday.
Let's the crowd soak it in. Walks off the green.
Yeah.
Is greeted by his mother. Nice hug.
It's Mother's Day.
Yeah, of course.
Got it.
Is greeted by his sister. Nice hug.
Very nice.
Then we see Alexis Randock.
Who's Alexis Randock?
Alexis Randock is Ricky Fowler's girlfriend.
Yeah.
She's also a former Arizona State Sun Devil student.
Oh, I like that.
And they then decide that they kind of want to go PG-13 on the nice NBC audience.
Meaning,
well, if you're watching
that's
the stream
her?
Right now, yeah, she was basically wearing, for those of you that can't see it, she was wearing a piece of cloth as a shirt and some cut-off jeans that were cut off relatively high and no one was really
that's
complaining about it.
That's not something you get at the merchandise tent at the Players' Championship.
You have other golfers, I guess from what you said, like other golfer wives saying, you know what, we need to practice our post-golf tournament victory celebratory
kiss. Man. So did that start out on her shoulder and it just made its way down to her arms?
I mean, I don't know. It's just you
did we
can
have
kind
boobage
of,
there?
No, you can just kind of use your imagination, though.
No,
because,
that's kind of nasty. Not on this show.
So I woke up this morning, I was watching one of the local news, and they were making a big deal out. And I didn't know that there was an Arizona State connection, but this girl who is now a bikini model.
It's like they had a connection.
Went to Arizona State. Imagine that. A hot girl who went to Arizona State and is now a model. Gee, I would have never guessed.
You don't know this.
Good for Ricky
You're
Fowler.
You're married to a hot girl. She did she go to ASU?
She did. But she
okay,
is not
so
a
there you
model.
Go.
She's a chef.
That's fine. She doesn't have to be a hot model. She's a hot chef. What do you want? What do you want? There you go. Yeah. Just say, I married a hot chef. I'll help you through this marriage thing. You got to build her up,
yeah,
man.
It's fine. It's fine. But it's just one of those things where Ricky Fowler wins his second ever pro event, and more of the scuttlebutt isn't, wow, I really liked your shot on 17 in the playoff, or that putt to win it all was great. It's, man, did you see his girlfriend and what happened after they won?
Well, she doesn't want him to get away. I mean, playing tonsil hockey in front of everybody, there's nothing wrong with that. I've tried
Fowler's,
that myself.
And Ricky Fowler's a good-looking guy. You know, he's hip and he's
great. Got a couple dollars in his pocket.
Of course. He's got the Puma endorsement. Things
sure.
Are okay. His life is okay.
So why make such a... I would love to see more girls maul their guys
but
when
it's
over with.
It's golf.
It doesn't matter.
But think about when Phil won a major. His little girls ran over and he hugged them.
Yeah, I know.
And then his
That's
wife
fine.
Came over and they hugged and it was a more of a Kodak moment. I mean, this thing, you need an ID to see this.
I want
to
see this. Imagine the ratings points of Ricky Fowler is in the lead, but this means we get to see Alexa tomorrow. Right?
Yeah, I just told Jared to put the pictures back up on the stream just so I could see him again.
Sure. Sure.
Wow.
I mean, what if he won this in Phoenix at the Waste Management? Isn't this appropriate? I mean, would he like, look, they're playing tonsil hockey.
Which
There's
is
nothing
fine.
Wrong
it's,
with that.
Hey.
He's got his putter in his hand.
You know what? If you can do it,
yeah.
Go do it.
Yeah, sure.
You just won $1.8 million. Let's go celebrate. Because that's what the purse was.
Right.
Pre-tax.
All right. You can put her back up the whole segment if you
want.
Yeah,
that's all right. I'd rather look at her than look at you.
Yeah,
so.
I know. I would too. Let me get into this Hack-A-Shack thing. So Houston decided to hack DeAndre Jordan last night Suns could only hope to be in the playoffs or even in the second round of the playoffs. It's not happening with this current cast of characters. So Kevin McHale, I think, is the best thing that could have happened to Kevin McHale today was LeBron James saying, I scratched that play. Otherwise, we would be talking about James Harden, who said after the game, I don't like the hack of whoever strategy, but it's the coaching strategy. Meaning, I don't agree with my coach, but, you know, he's the coach. Watching 95 free throws, and I'm not exaggerating about the number, watching 95 free throws in the Clippers-Houston game. Last two games, the two teams have combined to shoot 190 free throws, and fans pay to watch this. DeAndre Jordan is 14 of 34. He can't play the game. Now, he can block shots, and he can get rebounds, and he can do all sorts of things. But if you can't make the free throw, you shouldn't be out on the court unless it's a 128-95 beatdown.
And with him, it's definitely more of a mental thing.
There's no
question. I mean, his form really is not bad, and that's what they keep referring to on these broadcasts. Like, look at the way, you know, his release is good. He's got a high release. It's just, it's in his head. You know, when you start missing as many as he has, it just becomes more of a block than
anything. When you see in the second quarter, Eric, second quarter at 6 minutes to go in the second quarter, there are points in a basketball game. Look, I know every game is important and every moment supposedly important, but honestly, it's important to get off to a good start. It's important the last 2 minutes of the half to not get blown out so you go in the locker room. It's important the first 2 to 5 minutes of the second half.
Yep.
And the final 2 minutes of the game. There are lulls in a basketball game where you're not going to lose the game most times.
Especially in the NBA.
Because
all teams make a run. It's the NBA.
Sure. So if you know that you're going to have this guy out on the floor, and here's my problem. What happens in the NBA always trickles down to college. And what happens in college always trickles down to high school, so it's going to be part of the strategy of colleges. You're going to see the hack of Shaq or the hack of whoever go into play in a college game. If you're playing a team that is up-tempo and you just automatically foul on the defensive end and you have your seventh, eighth guy on the bench and you foul their worst free throw shooter and you take the possession out of their hands, you're naturally going to shorten the game in terms of points, okay? So you miss 20 free throws by a guy like DeAndre Jordan. It's great strategy. If I'm in the same place, I probably do it the last couple of minutes of a game. But it's really hard for fans to watch. Like, this series has been really hard. And for Kevin McHale to say they're just mucking it up, Mucking it up is not what fans pay money to see. What they paid to see is this play from Blake Griffin last night.
Pollard goes up with a right-hand jump hook in the paint, misses it, rebound taken by Griffin. Clippers motor up court with it. Griffin bursts the street all the way to the goal. Lay it up, lay it in. If it's Howard, he's done. And a technical foul. They've thrown Howard out of the game.
I don't think I'd want Dwight Howard on my team. If I'm the Suns and they say, hey, Dwight Howard is available, have we learned enough from Dwight Howard from Orlando to Los Angeles to Houston that he's going to give you moments, but he's not going to be the guy that you can build this thing around? Have we learned that yet, Eric?
Yes.
I mean, are we seeing this the same way?
And his stock is sort of declining a little bit. I mean, he used to be like the all-everything, like, wow, Dwight Howard. And now Dwight Howard can still be a dominant player at times, but like you mentioned, the inconsistency last night didn't play well.
Who has the best coach that's left of the teams? In my opinion, it's the Clippers. Doc Rivers is the best coach that is out there.
It's not David Blatt.
It's not. I scratch that. It's not David Blatt.
I don't even know who coaches the Grizzlies.
It's not Steve Kerr. It's not. Why am I blanking? It's not Tom Thibodeau. Remember that Steve Kerr tried to hire Tom Thibodeau to come here? Do you remember that?
Yep.
And that Thibodeau's name, after D'Antoni left, that they tried to hire Tom Thibodeau to come here. And Tom Thibodeau's style, if you watch that series, that's as physical and playoff and big boy basketball as you're going to see what's going on between. And I love that style. I look over at the Clippers. I don't like the style. And I think Kevin McHale is just grasping at straws. But if you look at the Clippers, Doc Rivers is the best coach. The best point guard that's out there when he's healthy, in my opinion, is Chris Paul. Blake Griffin has suddenly emerged in this playoff series because he's been able to show more of what he has.
Yeah, it's no longer, all Blake Griffin can do is dunk. I mean, the playoffs have proven he is a playmaker. He's an outside shooter. He's a good free throw shooter. He can get others involved. He's had huge rebounding numbers. He's done it all.
And if you look at the Clippers, too, they can shoot the ball outside. All Golden State can do is shoot the ball outside. When you see Harrison Barnes guarding Zach Randolph tonight, that is all you need to know about what Golden State has inside. That's not going to work. You're not going to win when that happens. So I look at the Clippers as the best team in the Western Conference. Memphis is probably right there, but we never see Memphis play, so we don't know that much about Memphis. Over in the East, are you kidding me? Washington with John Wall hurt. Atlanta's a regular season team. They're built for the regular season. The Bulls are doing what they're doing, but I don't think they have quite enough. So that leaves LeBron without Kyrie Irving and without Kevin Love. It's truly remarkable what he's doing. This segment of the show brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. My Santan Ford weekend went like this and exactly like this. On Friday night, I had a swim event, had basketball for my son. I'm out in my Ford Fusion, the hybrid. We have a full tank of gas. Saturday, had more basketball. Saturday night, I had a United game to do up in Scottsdale. I had to drive from down Gilbert up to Scottsdale. Yesterday was family day, church, Mother's Day, all that stuff. This morning, I get into my vehicle. It's barely below half a tank. It's above half a tank. It's like 52 miles the gallon that I was getting. So the vehicle that I drive, it makes a lot of sense for me. I go a lot of places, and I do so. I'm comfortable, in style, great gas mileage, great. 52 miles to the gallon is what I've been getting. I haven't seen the gas gauge move much at all from Santan Ford. Think about that vehicle for you the next time that you're in the market. Could be a certified pre-owned like we've done with the Ford Explorer. General Manager Tim Hovick and company, they do it right. It's Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you, just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. That is Santan Ford. Jude LaCava's on the other side. Paula is out today, so we'll go around things in the Arizona sports scene with Jude LaCava, good friend from Fox 10. That's next. Off we go in hour number two. Thanks for being with us. Later in the week, Peter King, our weekly segment with the Monday Morning Quarterback on the Brady suspension when it comes out. Pedro Gomez, all things baseball, ESPN's baseball insider. He joins us every week as well. Bill Goodykunz, Goody at the Movies. Paula is out this week. Jude LaCava, nice enough to jump on board with us for a couple of minutes. My friend, first and foremost, longtime Valley broadcaster, Fox 10 sports director. He joins us for a couple of minutes. So you're a Cleveland guy. And you heard that LeBron said, we are scratching that play. Your reaction is?
Thank goodness.
David Blatt's walking, right?
Well, you know, Dave Blatt, really to the credit of Dave Griffin, when they put that Mozgov and J.R. Smith trade together to acquire those two guys, kind of saved the season because they were in trouble.
Yeah.
And I think that there's still, whether it's Mike D'Antoni or anybody that comes over a first-year NBA coach, there's a learning curve. And I think Dave's a bright guy, intelligent guy. But, boy, he's a rookie. He is a rookie, and let's not forget that. And LeBron, as smart as he is with his basketball IQ, did the right thing. Now, there was also some luck involved, Brad. I mean, look, they could have easily called that timeout.
Yep.
He vetoed the play, and he said, just give me the ball, let me take a shot, and they were fortunate. But, yeah, they've had to work around a rookie coach, and this series is going seven.
If you drop a play with LeBron James, you have him taking the ball out of bounds? With one point?
No way.
I mean, come on. I hear this stuff, and I'm thinking, you've got to be kidding me.
Not unless you can shoot over the backboard right. In a game of horse and it counts. No, it was a nice little shake-and-bake move on Jimmy Butler, and he was fortunate. I mean, what a difficult shot that he nails. But, yeah, Blatt is a work in progress, and they've had to kind of cover that up. I think, you know, when you look at veteran coaches that would have jumped into that position with LeBron, there were other candidates. But they're working through it, and sometimes you got to make up for the losses of what a coach doesn't have quite yet.
All right, let's localize this then. How far away are the Suns?
Way, way far away. They're in big trouble. It's 5 years without a playoff appearance. It's been one bad decision after another, and now you've got a lawsuit, an investigation, and an indictment on your hands with the Morris brothers. I think you're going to see changes. I would say Lon Babbie's probably going to step aside and
good.
Project a retirement.
Good.
So Robert will have to, again, look at a new overseer of operations. I think Ryan McDonough has talent. I'd just like to see him complimented. I would have loved to have seen a really good basketball guy like a Grant Hill take over the organization with the informatics of a McDonough. That combination, I think, would have showed some promise because Grant's a brilliant guy that knows the game and would be a perfect representation for Sarver and change the perception overnight. But you just don't know what Robert's going to do next. And they got a ton of issues. They need veteran leadership. They still have many decisions. You know, as much as people were saying one step forward last year, I've never bought into it. I've been consistent. Yep. I don't buy the leadership or lack thereof of this organization. And they're wallowing.
Yeah, I mean, Lon should have been gone a long time ago, in my opinion. It's similar to when Jeff Morad was here. You know, agents are agents. Grant Hill comes in, and you can immediately get in the process of having somebody recruit star players to come here. There's no reason, and I never thought you and I would have this conversation, but there's no reason for a star player to come to Phoenix, Arizona anymore. There's none, and it used
exactly
to be a destination.
Right. And I don't be surprised if you see Grant surface in Atlanta.
Yeah, that's going to happen.
I would say that, and again, you know, Robert had every chance to confer and consult with Jerry for many years, and that didn't happen as well. So he gets where he's at. I mean, I it's unfortunate for Suns fans, Brad.
Okay, so let's get into Jerry here a little bit. So him not getting USA Place built to this point to me is a big surprise, and it actually was something that I thought would have transformed downtown Tempe even more. And Tempe is changing by leaps and bounds. And to put that facility there would have been great. Jerry, I think the issue with Dr. Crow and Brian Mueller over Grand Canyon, those two going back and forth, and Jerry being on the Grand Canyon side of the street, I don't think he's getting much cooperation from Michael Crow anymore. And they're kind of giving each other the stink eye. Am I right on that? Are you hearing the same thing?
I think you're right. It's a yes and no. I do think that Jerry played a role in the hiring of Bobby Hurley, and to me it says a lot about Jerry's kind of ecumenical attitude about just helping people and programs. That's the beauty of Jerry Colangelo. He was willing to say, look, my vested interest is with Dan Marley and Grand Canyon, but if you're looking for a really good coach, yeah, take one of Coach K's guys and Coach Hurley. So he is always about the betterment. First and foremost, even though there's a rivalry there, and even though the funding kind of circulated more to the stadium issue and not to the USA basketball facility. So, you know, that's the way it played out. But to me, the beauty of Jerry Colangelo is he can rise above the ego of these situations and say, okay, you want a recommendation? Yeah, Hurley would be a great fit, and still go about his business.
Okay. Robert Sarver saying he needs a new building. Where are you at on this one? And I talked to Jerry about this, that the footprint is not big enough in downtown to refurbish, do the refab on U.S. Airways Center. Robert's saying they need a new building. Where are you at on this?
You know, I think the problem with Robert right now is the perception that is so different than when Jerry was at his peak.
No question.
He could. You have to be a diplomat. You have to be a politician. You have to be a collaborator to bring people together, and that includes politicians and ballot issues. And Robert is not in that position. His perception is we're still waiting to see what you got. You're running out of any kind of gravitas from the days of Nash and Amari, and he doesn't have that kind of clout. I'm worried. I'm worried that leverage could be the issue. You know, maybe he would consider moving it to a talking stick. Who knows? Off the 101.
Yep.
Would he look at, dare I say, saying, listen, if I can't get a building, I might do this. You know where I'm going with that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm concerned. I would be very concerned, because if the last 5 years is any kind of track record, how do you sell this to the voting public? How do you sell this to the political movers and shakers that would have to go to bat for you? Now, you could sell the property, the current property, and get some value there for part of the price, but you still, the costs of a new facility today would be anywhere for low, $600 million to $800 million, if you're going to do it right.
No, I mean, I've brought this up on the air. My concern is that Seattle's sitting out there, and Las Vegas is sitting out there, and 100 other cities are sitting out there, and I have no idea what Robert Sarver is going to do. So it's not so simple.
It's a concern. It's a big concern, Brad, and yeah. It should be for Suns fans.
It should be.
I've never been more concerned about the state of this franchise than now.
Yeah, it's one of those stories that it's kind of there below the surface and nobody wants to talk about it. And when you bring it up, oh, well, the Suns would never move. I'm just telling you, if you know this owner, then you're the only one that's got him figured out. I think the hockey team is gone within 2 years. I don't see any other way that this thing gets worked out. They can bring in more assistant. The amount of assistant city managers and city managers and employees that have been run through Glendale in the last 10 years, it would fill up an awful lot of paper to go through all each and every name.
They're definitely in jeopardy. I think that, you know, what's happened with the scale down, the budget, and the youth movement is not a good sign. These hockey fans have waited 10 years through the bankruptcy issues to have something to hang their hat on, and now you're asking them to wait even more. So there's a lot of dynamics that are working against the status of that team. Is there a major local investor that can ride in on a white horse and say, wait a minute, I'm going to ingest another $150 million? Because in my mind, Mr. LeBlanc and Mr. Gosby don't have a high-end budget to really create a buzz with this franchise, period.
No, I mean, Bob Parsons, and if Jerry got back involved, but even so, Jude, the building location is, as you and I saw the landscape of the Valley change by putting a building out in Glendale, it's just proven to be a death trap. People are not going to go out there in the numbers that they need.
Give you an idea. Let's solve it right now. How about this? Let's take over U.S. Airways Center or Talking Stick Arena and make that the refurbished home of the Coyotes downtown. And then let's also bring ASU's Division I hockey team downtown near the ASU campus, just blocks away from a lot of students. And let's collaborate on a project with some leadership here to see, hey, maybe there's an answer there. How about that one?
Okay, what happens to Glendale? What happens to an empty building out there?
I think you have to look at some creativity with Glendale. And what I would do with that is I would take weekday games downtown, and I would look at the high-profile weekend games out in Glendale. And for a period of time, that would satisfy Glendale's debt service with the hope of co-opting a program for hockey downtown with ASU and the Coyotes during the week. It's a little unorthodox, but to me, the downside games are during the week, okay, when you got to go to Glendale. They do okay on the weekends when it's a Friday, Saturday, or Sunday type game. If you're creative and you have the leadership, maybe there's a way. But again, that takes somebody with a lot of courage.
No, I like that. Because people are not going to drive from Mesa to watch Columbus on a Tuesday night. There's no. That's just the way it is. A couple of things.
By the way, ASU needs a hockey. They're going to Division I. They need a hockey arena. Why not? I mean, look, there are some arenas. If you go to the CCHA and you look at what happens up there in Boston, man, this could be a very interesting project.
And I think Ray Anderson's vision is on campus in Tempe, along with the basketball arena, but I like where you're going with this, with the downtown Tempe students. Let me go over to ASU then. Ray has come in here, Ray Anderson, and he has fired a bunch of coaches. He's moved out a lot of old blood. He is finally, I think, turning the Titanic around in a direction that looks to me to be sustainable. I think the only question is, can he continue to do it, or at some point does he become frustrated as others have in his position? What's your read over at ASU?
I like the age of where Ray's at in his career and what he's already done. And I actually, for the first time, and I've been through Charles Harris and Kevin White and Gene Smith, I think there's a certain genuineness to make this work and a strong relationship with Dr. Crow to make this work. And based on the short period of time he's been on the job, he's been very impressive. I think this is his swan song. Look, he's in his late 50s. He goes 5-6 years to his mid-60s, and he leaves quite a legacy with the dollars that have been coming in, and the fundraising has been like never before,
especially
with the football program and Todd Graham. So if you look at it, I would say, you know, he's set. This is the first time I've seen an AD that's not thinking about Notre Dame or Ohio State that wants to be here.
As long as they stay out of his way, that's my thing.
And the support is there. And you know what? He's had run of the place, you know, from Tracy Smith to Zeke Jones to Bob Bowman to Coach Hurley. I think that's a nice streak.
And that leaves the Cardinals. So their window, in my view, is now. Their window is not 2 years from now. Their window is now. Their quarterback isn't getting any younger. They have positions that have some age on them. I don't think they're Seattle as of yet, but I think that they're in a very good position, assuming they keep Carson upright.
I would agree with that. I think that it is a Carson Palmer age and health issue. Everything I hear about his rehab is phenomenal. And his passion to want to prove that he can make a strong run into the postseason. I think the long term is, you know, watching the development of Logan Thomas, where does that go? And I do like the way these guys draft. You know, if you look at the schematics of taking guys that really want to play, like Ronnie Gunter and Shaq Riddick and Marcus Golden, and then you package it with guys on the tail end of their career that are still out to prove, and we've seen those guys, John Abraham, not more recently, a guy like Lamar Woodley. I'm curious to see what he brings to the table. It's a very consistent model of taking guys that overachieve, that have good skill sets, and then complementing them with veteran players that are proving they still want to play. Proving wanting to play is the formula that's consistent on both ends. So I like what they're doing, but it's a quarterback league, and you're exactly right, Brad. Carson Palmer's ability to be durable and hang in there is certainly going to be the fateful question.
I mean, they're a 12-win team or they're a 4-win team. I think it just depends on how things go, because it's that narrow of a margin, Jude. It really is with this team.
Well, we saw that. We saw, you know, without experienced quarterbacking, and no offense to Ryan Lumley, no chance. So, you know, can Drew Stanton be a guy that can win a game? Certainly. But it's also a question of development of quarterbacks in the long term over the next 2, 3, 4, 5 years. I think Carson, with some luck, can give you another year or two at a high level. And let's face it, like you said, they want to be in Santa Clara.
Yeah. Stay well. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
You got it, Brett.
Good stuff. There's Jude LaCava for a couple of minutes, sports director over at Fox 10. More importantly, my friend.
Like our Facebook fan page for unique Arizona sports content from the high schools to the pros. Facebook.com/sports360AZ.